Good morning and welcome to the Eastman Financial Report. I'm Dan Eastman, your host, and today is Monday, January 22nd, 2024. I'm very happy to be back on the air. We had a very rough week last week in the aftermath of a major storm that blew through the Midwest, the upper Midwest, including my home state of Wisconsin, and dumped an amazing amount of wet, heavy snow, and then followed up with a polar vortex where everything's been minus degrees Fahrenheit. And of course, our internet was knocked out in the storm, and it took a week to get the internet back up and running. But I'm happy to say that we've been able to upgrade our equipment, and we're now running faster than ever with our local internet supplier. So we're not expecting any more technical problems, and you should be seeing this broadcast in as good a quality as can be delivered on the internet, I guess. Anyway, thank you so much for tuning into the Eastman Financial Report. Thank you for watching WVW TV. We appreciate your viewership, and of course, we always appreciate your enthusiastic support of the work we do here. As you know, we bring information to the great marketplace of ideas. And my job as the Eastman Financial Report, of course, is to comment on the financial situation, the economic situation, not only in the United States, but throughout the world. As you know, every period in time, every epoch of history has its own economics and its own challenges. And of course, we live in a very dynamic time and a very dynamic place. And just as an example, with the ability to communicate instantly via the internet with electric power, the problem is when there's no electric power and no internet, it becomes impossible. So we're very happy to be part of the great marketplace of ideas and bringing these financial and economic thoughts to the marketplace. So thank you so much for tuning in. We really appreciate your viewership. We also appreciate your sponsorship. If you're so inclined to support this work, this ministry, this effort, you can go to the wvwfoundation.com and you can make a donation as a sponsor to help us defray the costs of keeping this information flowing 24/7, and we appreciate all of our viewers who do that to consider making a donation to the foundation. You can also call 901-468-9357 and make a donation by phone as well. We also operate the network via a commercial. We're not a commercial network. We don't sell commercial advertising, but we do have sponsors. Businesses that sponsor our efforts here. And of course, the sponsor for my program is Swiss America Trading, which is a company, it's an American company based in Arizona. And they make a market in tangible precious metals. And of course, that means if you are interested in buying some tangible precious metal, which means tangible, means you can hold it in your hand, you own it, you control it, it's in your custody. If you're interested in making a purchase in that space, you will want to find a strong partner, a strong vendor, somebody with experience and expertise. You know, there's places all over the internet you can go and buy a block of gold, and then of course you send them your money and you get the block of gold, and then you hope it's the proper weight and the proper quality and quantity and pureness. Well, if you deal with a quality of vendor, you're not going to have those issues. You'll know by dealing with Swiss America Trading that if you buy an ounce of gold from Swiss America, there will in fact be an ounce of gold in that product, and it'll be pure gold, as pure as 0.99, whatever the metric is. And that's important. When you're spending your hard-earned money on tangible things, just like when you buy a car or a refrigerator, you expect to get what you paid for. That's the same thing with investing or purchasing precious metals. And of course, when you do that, you'd want to find a real strong partner. And Swiss America is a very strong partner in that space. You can reach out to them at 1-800-519-6271 and ask them to send you some free information. If you tell them Dan Eastman from the Eastman Financial Report sent you, they're happy to send you free information that explains how that all works. How does that market work? You can also go to their website, which is swissamerica.com. And if you use the promo code EASTMEN, which stands for Eastman Financial Report, then they'll be happy to send you the same free information. And you can shop around and see what they have to offer. And of course, you may be interested in purchasing precious metals for your own portfolio. But also keep in mind as we enter into you know, the year of 2024, there are a number of gift-giving opportunities that come up throughout the year, birthday, graduation. It's a great gift for somebody graduating high school to give them a precious metal coin and explain to them that back in the olden days, money used to be, you know, tangible and it used to be precious, and how we're entering into a phenomenal period of digital currency and digital money and digital accounts, and everybody's got their money on their phone. But maybe the idea is that, you know, young graduates should be thinking about exactly what money is. And that raises an opportunity. It's an opportunity to instruct the young and explain the difference between tangible money you can hold in your hand and digital money, which, like I found out last week when my power went out, the internet went out, you know, I was somewhat concerned that perhaps all of my digital money disappeared. Well, it didn't. It's all where it was, I'm assuming. But the point is, if you're out of power and out of internet for a week, you're out of money because you can't quite get to your bank. And if your phone isn't charged up, then maybe you can't buy your latte at the coffee shop by touching your magic card and all this. So anyway, give that some thought. And if you're looking for a vendor, Swiss America is a great company. They've been in this business a long time. They're professionals. And you want to trust professionals when you make any buying decision at all. So give them a call at 1-800-519-6271 or go to the website swissamerica.com and use the promo code Eastman, and they will be happy to give you all sorts of great information. Well, let's jump into the news, and I apologize. We've had some news gaps and big things have happened while I'm sitting here in the dark. The rest of the world moved on. But the biggest story that I wanted to start with, of course, is this never-ending can-kicking that's going on in Washington, D.C. with respect to the federal spending, this federal budget. There isn't a budget. It's federal spending. And, of course, when I last discussed this 2 weeks ago, we had realized that the Democrats and Republicans and the Senate and the House of Representatives, they cut a deal where they were going to extend the continuing resolutions on current spending levels. And there were four of them that were pending. And of course, the parties got together over the weekend, 2 weekends ago, and they decided to cut a deal. And then, of course, the conservative faction bubbled up and said, hey, wait a minute, we want spending cuts or discipline. And of course, then the lights went out. And then what happened was they kicked the can into March. So we will once again, I think this is now the fifth can kicking since I started broadcasting last February. But the continuing resolutions are now pushed at their current funding levels into March. So we will have this discussion again in about 6 weeks. And of course, we'll see the same thing. But what this tells us when you analyze those actions, and you think about what's going on, is it's becoming increasingly difficult, if not impossible, for the Congress of the United States to manage its money, because there are so many commitments to spend money. Programs are funded, the Defense Department, and you got all the social programs and all the spending programs, that there's very little discretionary income that can actually be cut. And that results in a persistent deficit spending problem, because Congress does not raise the taxes to cover the deficit. So they keep the taxes at a politically low level, and they keep the spending at a politically high level. And then there's this deficit. And we know it was a $1.66 trillion kicking of the can that has been kicked till March, which tells us that our annual deficit, our gap between our tax revenues and our federal spending is a phenomenally large number, at $1.66 trillion. We know it was almost $2 trillion on a year-over-year basis a couple of months ago. So we're in a situation where the federal government is spending trillions more than they're taking in taxes. And so, well, how can you do that? And how can it be that you can continue? Because I'd like to figure out a way to spend money forever and ever and ever that I don't have. And unfortunately, I'm not able to go into the bond market and issue bonds to fund my deficit. I don't have a deficit, but if I did, people like you and I are not able to go and fund our deficit. I suppose you could try it with credit cards until the credit card companies figured out what you were doing. They'd cut you off. But nobody's cutting off the federal treasury. So effectively, they're financing the difference into infinity or eternity, or perhaps not eternity, but perhaps not infinity, but for the remainder of any of our lifetimes. And if you're a two-year-old watching this, you're out of luck. They won't be paid back in a human's lifetime, because this is just a vast, vast spending of money. And I commented last week about that because when you start to look at the numbers, it's one thing to do deficit spendings in time of war or crisis or national emergency because you got to go into the debt market and raise some money and spend something because there's an emergency or there's some, you know, serious threat of loss of life or property, whatever. But we're not in that. We're just debt funding the continuing burn. And that's becoming a real problem because the number at 34 trillion, which will soon be 36 trillion and beyond, is a point where it starts to become relative to the population base of the country. And I'm submitting that this is becoming a problem when you have 330 million Americans. And as our illustrious vice president pointed out, the vast majority of them don't have $400 to their name in case they have an emergency. They're not going to be issuing 10-year bonds. They don't have $400 to pay an emergency medical bill. So we're talking about a population of 330 million people where the vast majority pay little or no taxes, and the middle pays most of the taxes, and the wealthy have basically escaped the gravitational pull of the economy. There aren't enough people left to support that level of debt without severe consequences. And the consequences, of course, will be raise the taxes and tax that silo or start taxing the lower income people. And that's politically impalatable. And nobody's going to go out and tax the poor. We love taxing the rich. That's fun. But tax the poor. Let's tax the poor. Probably not going to get you elected next November. So we have a situation where politically it's very difficult to raise the taxes. And if you do raise the taxes on the middle, it becomes a confiscatory and burdensome to the point where you're crushing your productive middle class. And that becomes a real problem. If you look at other economies like Venezuela, 30 years ago, it was a booming economy. They were like the fourth largest oil producer. I mean, they were on a roll down there. And what's happened since, of course, is you've got 90% of the people are living in poverty, and 10% of the people have escaped the gravitational pull of the Venezuelan economy, and they can function globally. And that's what the very wealthy do. They function globally because money is digital nowadays, and it's very easily transportable, and it's very easily movable. So you end up with piling a massive amount of debt onto a working population, and the United States population just simply is not large enough to continue supporting this massive load of debt. I think last week I had mentioned that there are, for every tax-paying unit, the taxpayers, it's $264,000+ in accumulated debt. Now, that's a lot of money. If you're you know, a middle class person paying taxes, and you know you theoretically owe somebody, you know, $264,000, that's going to put a crimp on your lifestyle. Now they're never going to come and collect it. You know, I suppose in normal times, I suppose if an invading army came and demanded it, tribute taxes. Start looking at history from the Roman Empire forward. You know, this is not the first time you've had populations taxed into oblivion by kings that are aggressively invading other kings, only to find out that when the king loses, you end up paying tribute for three generations down the road. It's a real problem, and I think politically, Americans need to start asking their elected officials, how is it we can continue to fund these massive deficits when our tax base is really struggling to support this level of taxation? And of course, you see the work being done by the Treasury Department and the Internal Revenue Service, which is a bureau of the Treasury Department, as they're trying to make sure everybody's paying their fair taxes. And of course they should. I mean, if you're an American, you got to pay your taxes according to the law. You pay your taxes, you pay everything you owe, and that's how the system works. But you know, they're really starting to squeeze every last nickel out of the economy. But squeeze as they might, there comes a point in time when a $2 trillion a year deficit is not a sustainable number for our population. And I also raised the issue, and I got a little blowback from that. I'm not advocating illegal immigration to the United States, but what I was trying to point out is that in times past, in the beginning of the late 1800s into the 1900s, America was expanding, and there was a very serious labor shortage. So there was a big draw to get Europeans to move to the United States, and in they came through Ellis Island, and they integrated into the society, and we built a great modern society. That was done purposely because you needed more people. You simply needed more people for expansion. And that was before the income tax, because the government was selling land off. You see, they negotiate deals with the tribes, and then they'd open that land for settlement. And when the settlers came from Europe and bought the land, the money went to the federal treasury. And then there, you know, there was school sections and this and that. But at the end of the day, when all the land was pretty much sold off, they ended up having to find another way to fund the federal government. And in 1913, of course, they introduced the income tax. You know, that's where we are today. Well, it's the same problem. When you get here as an immigrant and you find out that, you know, half of your income is taken in state taxes, federal taxes, local taxes, property taxes, sales taxes, gas taxes, you know, you're looking at coming to the United States for opportunity, only to find out you're really here because we need you to work and pay taxes, because you got to pay for all this stuff. So maybe, you know, people sneaking in might want to stop and think about that. Where do you, you know, which horse do you hitch your wagon to? And do you want to hitch your wagon to the horse that's going to take half of your wagon every year? But anyway, that's an issue that we're going to have to continue watching. And there's no simple solution. And of course, I have been saying that when you look historically at these situations in the past, it's always a bumpy ride. The poor are basically poor, okay? They remain poor. The middle class gets wiped out. The rich have got their money elsewhere. And when they remonetize, it's a restart. And that is a very painful thing for people in the middle. And that's why when you think about how does the federal government deal with this phenomenon or crisis, the politically palatable answer, if you do some game theory and you start thinking about political game theory, which is always risky, but the easiest path forward, of course, is to inflate your way out of the situation where $34 trillion doesn't look like a lot of money. I mean, it's a vast amount of money, but if you were going to inflate so that, you know, the annual economy and the normal politically acceptable tax base is going to support that type of deficit and spending, then you need to make that number look smaller. And the only way to do that is through inflation. And that's an interesting problem, because as we know, the Federal Reserve, the great Federal Reserve system that we have, their next Federal Open Market Committee meeting is January 31st. They're going to be meeting next week, and of course, every time they meet, their job is to play with this increasingly antiquated mechanism they have of tweaking the interest rates, with this idea that by tweaking the interest rates 0.25%, you can slow the economy or speed up the economy merely by fiddling around the edges. It's like, you know, where do you position the punch bowl at the party? You know, do you push it a little closer to the edge and people can have punch and they get happy, and then the party picks up, or they pull it back a little bit, it's a little harder to get a cup of punch, and then maybe the party slows down a little bit. That tool is becoming suspect. If you look at the general information in the financial media over the last 6 months, it's clear to economists and financial people that the Federal Reserve's famous tool that we you know watch with bated breath is having less and less effect, because the global debt markets are speaking, and that's what markets do. When you look at how free markets, fair markets, clearing markets work, they process information. There's buyers and there's sellers, there's supply and there's demand, and then there's a bargaining that goes on, and that's how a market clears. And at a certain quantity, there's always a price. That was Adam Smith. And, you know, that's just the way markets work. And when the debt markets are starting to look at this gigantic debt number and the inability of the American public to continue paying taxes that support it, which leaves the government with no alternative but to keep borrowing more and more and more and making the problem bigger and bigger, the debt markets are saying, you know what? The Federal Reserve may be at 5.25, but that's a little thin. There's a lot more risk built into the system. We want 6% or whatever. They'll pick a number, and that's when the market is no longer being manipulated by the Federal Reserve, but it starts to dictate to the Federal Reserve where the interest rates should lie in a competitive market. And then, of course, what happens is that becomes bad news. And then the idea is, well, what do we do to suppress that, to bring this back? And that's when the system gets a little tricky, because you start to play with financial alchemy that is really in nobody's control. So of course, we're all watching the Federal Reserve next week. Oh, what'll they do? Will they raise? Will they lower? And the answer is, who cares? The market's going to go where the market goes. And at the end of the day, we know that the Federal Treasury of the United States must sell Treasury bills and bonds and notes every single day because they're refinancing their debt as these instruments come due. And every time they do that, that interest rate over the entire portfolio is continuing to increase because they're coming off a 1-2% interest rate environment over the last 20, 25 years, and they're now refinancing at 3%, 4%, 5%, you know, it's in the higher range. So as they do that, the burn or the interest rate, the aggregate interest rate to support the entire debt is becoming a larger number because it's just mathematics. So you're starting to look at $1 trillion+ of taxpayer money just to pay the interest on the outstanding debt. And they keep adding more and more outstanding debt. And of course, they're adding it at a 5, 5.25, wherever the Fed sets the number and the market reacts to, your all new debt is going out at a much pricier position. And that's why the Federal Treasury is trying to time its sales, where if you sell a note, a 1-year note versus a 10-year bond, if you sell the note and then worry about the problem next year, hopefully the interest rates have calmed down a little bit, you can finance it for less. If you go out and sell a 10-year bond right now, a 30-year bond at 5%, whatever the number is, 4%, 4.1%, you're going to lock that rate in for 5 years or 10 years. And that means the taxpayers have to pay that. Well, what happens when the American tax base, and there's only like 200 million taxpaying units, individuals, corporations, everybody but nonprofits, they don't pay taxes. You see, that money's floating around outside of the tax collector's grasp. But those of us paying taxes, at some point, the burden becomes too much. The deficit is increasing. And that's why when you watch this kick the can of $1.66 trillion, when we know we had a year-over-year number approaching $2 trillion in deficit, because you look at it year, month by month, year-over-year, and at the end of the day, you start to say, you know what, something has to give. And the question is, what gives? And we'll see. And I'm suspecting that instead of raising everybody's income taxes to 100% of your income, there you will see a yielding in this battle to fight inflation. And the problem is, if you're not prepared for inflation, that becomes a real problem. So one of the stories I wanted to talk about today, and I'm trying to catch up from a week of living in darkness, is that the stock market has hit an all-time high, 38,000. You know, the Dow Jones at 38,000. And this is not a stock picking show. I have no idea what stocks to pick, and I can't recommend any. I have no interest in picking stocks whatsoever. But the stock market, from an economic perspective, is worth noting because it's the equity market. And when you think about what is a stock, well, a stock is a percentage ownership, equity ownership in a company. So if you have a share of, let's say, General Motors, you have a little bitty percentage equity share of General Motors. You're part owner, okay? And effectively, what shares are doing is trading ownership in companies. And when you think about it from a legal perspective, shareholders own the company. So if a company decides to stop doing business and liquidate, it sells off, it pays off all its debts, it sells off all its assets, and then there's going to be some money left, okay? And if you're a shareholder, you get your percent of that money. That's your equity in that company. So when you look at the stock market and you look at inflation, the stock market can be an indicator of an inflationary environment. And again, I give no financial advice whatsoever. I'm not the person to ask. But if you were to ask people who follow the stock market, there are ways to invest in the stock market that will protect your buying power. Because let's say you would invest in a company that has an iron mine or something. Well, iron's going up, or copper. Copper's going up. Well, if you have a percentage ownership in a company that has assets, tangible assets that are increasing with inflation, then it stands to reason that stock is going to go up some number and follow inflation along. So when I see that the stock market is going up, that suggests to me that that smart money will position themselves so that when the rising tide of inflation enters the harbor, that boat will rise along with your precious metals and your real estate that you own. And that's a place where you can see an indicator of inflation. And that's why when you look at the stock market up, that suggests inflation. And when you look at real estate prices, the average home price in America is now $431,000. That suggests inflation. Same house, same just half price, years ago, it suggests inflation. When you look at what gold has done over the past 2023, it went up from like 1800 to 2100. I mean, it goes up. And what those are price signals that are telling economists and financial people that inflation is not a thing of the past. It's not something they can just control by turning on and turning off. But in the general market, and these are global markets, you're starting to see that there's a reflection in those prices that inflation is going on. And I would submit that some of that could possibly be people are realizing that with this massive debt, inflation is going to happen, and you're positioning yourself to try and catch that wave, as they say in California. So it's an interesting phenomenon. And again, I'm not a stock picker, and I couldn't tell you what to buy on the stock market, but I look at the Dow Jones Industrial Average going up and up and up. And when you look at the economy, you're seeing that, the cost of shipping things is going up because of the Red Sea problem, and they're shooting at the, all the container ships, and it's costing a lot more. Supply chains are lengthening because of the time it takes. That's not a good sign. You're seeing the job market is stalling out. I was reading an article that job dissatisfaction is really up. 85% of the people who have jobs don't like their job and they want to change their job, which is a big number. It's like nobody's happy. But at the end of the day, you got to be careful not to quit your job, because there's probably not a job waiting for you. Or if there is, it might not be as good a job as you left. But that's, again, another indicator that the economy itself is not really doing all that well as a result of just the underlying situation. And of course, the leading economic indicator number from the Conference Board came out in December, and it's down 0.1%. That's the 21st month in a row where that number is down. So when you think about leading economic indicators are down, cost of transportation is going up, people aren't happy with their jobs, but yet we see in price increases in precious metals, we see price increases certainly in the stock market, which is an equities market, and other areas where land prices, real estate prices are going up. Even though the demand, supply and demand, the volume sold is low, the prices are going up. It suggests that the way out of this national debt phenomenon is inflation. And when you think about it from a national security perspective, you can be the world's superpower when you're rich, when your taxpayers are doing well, because the full faith and credit of the United States means that the taxpayers are always going to pay the debt off. But when you stretch that rubber band too far, and it's no longer a rubber band, it's just a tight, tight thing, then that becomes a national security issue. Because if you're thinking about it, how long in times of relative peace, we're not at war theoretically with anybody at the moment, what would we do? What would we do if we found ourselves in a national emergency and we're broke? Well, that's not a good place to be broke. When you want to be strong, you have to be rich. And when you're spending yourself broke on all this crazy global spending that is adding nothing to the quality of anybody's life, then it puts us in a really difficult situation. So I think we'll talk more about that throughout the week. It's a problem. So anyway, thanks so much for tuning in. I'm happy to be back. I'm happy you're back watching me. And give Swiss America a call, 1-800-519-6271. And check out the wvwfoundation.com. You can help us there as well. Have a great afternoon. I'll talk to you tomorrow. Bye.